Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten. And on this week's episodes, we talk about Kylian Mbappe, who looks like he's off to Madrid, but how can PSG replace him?
Bringing in Osimhen could be good, but they thought that about the Messi-Mbappe-Neymar project and it didn't get the one thing they wanted. It feels like it's time for just at least to try something different. They've got some really exciting young prospects in that squad. Give them minutes and see what happens.
Then it's the burn book. It does just feel a little bit like, we're going to tell you what's good for you. We're going to tell you that you can't have this thing anymore. Like, I'm sorry, but nobody was drinking so many San Pellegrinos that it was going to kill them. And if they do, that's their fucking right. Like, I'm sorry. It just pisses me off. Before, over on the paid side, we take a look at Manchester United and dig a little deeper into their transfer needs. Every time we were asked to pick a midfielder on Football Daily, I would talk about this guy. And I always was like, he's never fit. But if you look at his numbers, they're incredible. And this season, he is just unbelievable. Like, it's all come together. Huge defensive output.
Yeah.
Like, six tackles and interceptions a game. Crazy stuff.
That's huge.
His passing has always been really good, but it's bananas under Alonso. He can just do everything. Before discussing our dream film lineups, that's all in this week's episodes of Unseen Incidents. So we're back for another round of Unseen Incidents. Just two hosts this week. We're down. Yeah. We're down one host.
Very, very disappointed.
Hopefully sleeping downstairs. Mm. She did not sleep through the podcast last time.
It was probably the most enjoyable post-production process I've ever gone through of editing the podcast, because we obviously do this over Zoom, and whatever technology Zoom has in terms of noise suppression is incredible, because you often clap or cough or like snap your fingers over Zoom and I don't hear it. But throughout the entire recording, Goldie did a lot of sneezes, which I didn't hear through Zoom. But then when I got into like editing the actual raws, there was just every like 30 seconds, there was just like a little sneeze. Oh, so it was quite funny. But very disappointed it's just you this week. I hope you're not offended by
I'm
that.
Sorry. No, I understand it. Yeah. It completely makes sense. But yes, probably will make it smoother going. Let's hope. Anyway, what are you drinking today? Are you drinking like a... You look like you're drinking a Hot Girl Stanley Cup.
So this is the infamous water cup I put in the burn book, or took out of the burn book.
Oh yeah, of course.
A few months back.
Special water cup.
I'm currently not drinking alcohol.
Oh my god.
With a view towards, I drank quite a bit on Saturday night, and I'm going on my stag day on Friday morning. So with a view to that, and the fact that this is a Tuesday night, for now, at least maybe in the interim between the public and the subscriber episodes, I might get an alcoholic drink, but currently I have a water cup filled with a hydration sports lozenge thing, the dilutable fizzy thing.
Yeah.
And I've also got a Pepsi Max cherry from lunch, which I think is quite a rogue shout, and I think would be quite divisive for a lot of people. But cherry Coke for me has always been cherry cola, I suppose this is Pepsi. Cherry cola has always been an OG for me, but I feel I'd be in the minority. Collect like of
really?
Society. I think so. I've never really met somebody or seen somebody else drinking cherry Coke. Closest I've seen is like Dr. Pepper, which isn't technically cherry Coke, but it kind of has the same taste profile.
Yeah,
but
it's like the same genre.
Still in the vast minority.
Well, keep this in mind, because in the burn book later we may visit very similar territories to this. I love cherry Coke. I'm a big cherry Coke defender. I think do you remember the old can that was like kind of black and red, like blocky design?
Of Pepsi or Coke?
Coke, cherry Coke. It was before they made it basically look like a Coke, but with just a different kind of color scheme. That was the best one. That was in the 90s when you feel like it was full of shit that's like illegal now.
I remember a similar time was when they started vanilla Coke in the tall can. And it was like, they obviously the standard red, but then they're like cream writing. and predominantly was found on holidays, at least at the start. It was found in France a lot more than it was in the UK in the early 90s, mid-90s. And that shit fucking slapped. That shit was crack. Like, that shit fucking slapped.
Okay, we actually can't go too far into this because seriously, like, we're going to come back to it later. Sorry.
So that's such a niche thing to put into
it. It just came up.
I have no idea how I'm crossing over, but sure.
Okay, well, we'll just hold all these thoughts. So this week, we're going to talk a bit about Kylian Mbappe, and we were going to talk about where he could go instead of Madrid, but it kind of feels like that topic may have flown by, given that pretty much everybody today is saying, yeah, the Madrid thing's happened. I mean, obviously, we saw some leaks come out that said, you know, he had talks with Manchester City before he told PSG that he was going to leave. And you're like, well, I would sound everyone out. I'd be like, how much money have you got? And they'd be like, a normal amount of money. And I'd say, nope, bye. I'm going to go to Madrid and they're going to pay me in like Pacific Islands or something. Like, I literally don't know how much it's going to cost them. But Mbappe, after this lot, I mean, truly, this might be the longest transfer saga ever, in that it's actually taken years and years and years and has always been a real thing. You know, like, I remember the Alex Telles one as well. Like, before that happened, there were like 3 years of, is he going to go to Man United? And then he did go to Man United. But
slightly less significance, though.
Sure. But this is one of those ones that just felt like we all assumed it from like the moment he burst onto the scene. And he's now 25. And finally, it looks like it might be happening. Apparently, according to Guillaume Balague, so take this with, you know, the biggest pinch of salt that you can find. He's going to go to Madrid on a 5-year deal, earning 290k per week, which seems quite low, but with a sign-on bonus of 150 mil to be paid over 5 years. So his salary overall, if you factor all that in, cash it out per week, 635,000 euro, which is like, I'd say it's like 2/3 of what we earn from this podcast. It's right up
at
there.
At best, yeah. Although that's not including any incentives he has. Obviously, we have that as well, which we're not including.
Yeah. True. I mean, we do. I wonder how much people think we make from this podcast. Because it's definitely less than people think. But it's going to make him the highest paid player in Real Madrid's history-ish. You know, obviously, they're going to be like, what? He's paid a perfectly normal amount of money.
But yeah.
But now he owns the stadium. It's fucking weird. It's still going to be about half of what he's earning at PSG. But anyway, do we really see any roadblocks to this, Pete? Like, what do you think the kind of thought process was going into this? Do you think it was just a matter of hashing out the numbers? Do you think he really would have considered City, Liverpool? I don't know who else, I don't remember who else was rumoured. Nobody was really rumoured very seriously, to be honest.
I mean, interestingly, the outside of Real Madrid, currently the shortest odds, or the ones that have been the shortest odds next to Madrid for the past like week or so, or maybe a little slightly longer, were Arsenal. And it wasn't that long a shot. It was like 8-1. I think it's a little bit higher than that now.
I guess we're rich and we've got assets we could sell. But how the fuck would we pay the wages?
Yeah.
Even if he wanted to come.
So I think, like you said, this is one of like the longest, most drawn out transfers that I can remember. And it's kind of all going to happen with a much less fanfare than it perhaps would have had it actually happened when it like could have, and when it was big news. It's like basically been a foregone conclusion in many people's minds for a couple of seasons now. And it's basically played out the way that everybody kind of expected it to play out. I suppose the only shock was that PSG didn't take the big money when it came in. And they were they were like, you know what, we're going to run a season with Mbappe, Messi and Neymar and see what happens. And, you know, they had a season. And if that's what makes them a big club, then sure. But they won nothing of note from it.
They got so little out of it, man. Like,
you know, Messi left on a free as well.
I guess they don't have to care, but it is like, it is like, as in, when we talk about a club wasting money, what we're really talking about is that club now can do less stuff because they've wasted some money. Whereas that is not really the case for PSG. So ultimately, it's kind of meaningless. But
like, I kind of get why they did it, because they wanted that season. And they obviously are still chasing the holy grail of the Champions League. And they figured that having that front three put them in the best position to do that. I can understand it. I wouldn't have necessarily done that if I was in charge of PSG, but, you know, money is largely no object for them, as you can see by the fact that they're paying Kylian Mbappe like 100 million euros a year all in. I think it cost him, it cost them about 200 million euros a year to keep him on the books, and Mbappe gets about 100 of that each year, which is mental to play in Liga. So I think everybody kind of thought this was going to happen. Mbappe was always going to outgrow PSG. And once you kind of took that for what it's worth, it was really where could he go? Not where he wanted to go, but where could actually feasibly take him and keep him happy, and also, most importantly, pay him. And realistically, it was pretty much always only going to be Real Madrid. I mean, especially as soon as City got Haaland, and Haaland was so successful so quickly, there really are a vanishingly small amount of teams that could be, one, an attractive enough prospect for a player who isn't that young anymore. He is still young, he's 25, but I feel that you still look at Mbappe through the lens of when he was an 18, 19-year-old, a little bit, and he actually doesn't have as many years left at the top as you might think. So this isn't the case. Because if he signed a 5-year deal, which he's expected to do, that will take him to when he's 30, if he sees it out.
Yeah.
So
God, that's crazy, man. That's come around very quickly.
It has, hasn't it? So it's not like this can be the move before the move. Or if this is a move for the move, it's more difficult because he's going to be tied up in a big contract and only signed on maybe like 2 years before. So this kind of had to be the big move, given that he waited till he was 25 to do it. And yeah, like with PSG, it always seemed to be the team that had like a place in his heart. It always seemed to be the team that has that kind of the Galactico feel about it, which Mbappe was drawn to. He loved the fact that he was like being courted by the biggest team, quote unquote, the biggest team in the world, or at least one of the biggest teams in the world, and that they were willing to just essentially like sell their soul to get him. You know, they've given him £150 million sign-on fee, reportedly. That will be paid out over 5 years. Like, it's a staggering amount of money for a club to pay for that isn't your kind of state-funded, etc. type money-washing company.
It's annoying that it's ended up this way, to be honest with you. Like, because he dicked around Real Madrid so much, there was a part of me that was like, I really, really hope that they just say,
fuck off. Yeah,
like, we don't need you anymore. Like, we've got Endrick coming in, we've got Vinicius, we've got Rodrigo. And actually, I saw this guy called Scott Willis. We sometimes talk about him. He does stats on Twitter. And he posted, like, his, according to his kind of, like, stats model, like, the five most similar players to Mbappe, and it went Rodrigo, Vinicius, like 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay, like, I guess get another one of these. Like, obviously it's Mbappe. Like, he's going to make you better. He's going to be great. But like, I don't know. It's not like, it doesn't make as much sense for them as it would have made for like Arsenal or Liverpool, I guess.
No. I just think they can take that money and use it throughout their squad better than what Mbappe will bring. But Mbappe is obviously a superstar. He obviously kind of brings his own like Mbrape notoriety. What?
I liked that you said Mbrape.
Mbrape, yeah.
It was great.
He brings that superstar like notoriety, etc. And he keeps him, not necessarily more relevant, but he is that kind of Galactico signing that Real Madrid have been known to have over the years. You know, obviously the Galactico era, then obviously Cristiano Ronaldo, now you've got Mbappe. Yeah, I can totally understand why they've done it. I don't necessarily think he might be worth as much as that, but yeah, it is kind of like a bit of a limp ending to it all. It's just kind of like crawled over the line. Obviously it's not official yet, but the reports are saying that pretty much it's all but agreed, just not signed. And I think, will he make Madrid better? Yeah, absolutely. He's one of the best players in the world. Is this kind of a boring transfer for the size of it and the money? Yeah. Because it's been going on for so long.
It's the most boring that a transfer of the best player in the world has ever been.
It's staggering.
Like, I've never been less excited to see a move. Like, especially because of the state of La Liga. Like, I mean, when I say that, like, look, there are some good teams like around La Liga. Like, obviously, Girona having a great season. Like, Athletic Club being pretty impressive, though I think they'll probably lose Nico Williams.
There are levels.
But Sevilla are crap right now. Barcelona are not very good right now. Atletico Madrid, they're okay. Like, but it's not like 2015, you know, where you had like an amazing Barcelona being led by Lionel Messi and an amazing Real Madrid being led by Cristiano Ronaldo and an amazing Atletico Madrid, you know, being led by Diego Simeone. Like, you just do not have that anymore. And most of the time, if Mbappe goes there, you are going to see him play against like quite bad teams and just absolutely demolish them. And in a way, it won't be that dissimilar from like his situation now at PSG, except like, you know, Real Madrid are bigger than PSG. But like most of the time he'll be playing crap teams and we'll only really pay attention when he's in the Champions League, because we won't even really pay that much attention when it's El Clasico, because no one really cares about El Clasico anymore. Like, we don't know who's going to be managing Barcelona next season, but it's not going to be the best available manager on the market, because the best available manager on the market is going to go to Liverpool. So it just feels a little bit like, I don't know, more of the same. Like, that's how it feels to me. Like, I obviously I wouldn't have wanted him to go to Liverpool, or certainly not to Man City. But at least if he was at Liverpool, there would be more games I'd be interested to see him play in. And I think he'd have a more challenging season. Like, right now, you know, like, what is it like? Obviously, I'm not saying he's not sprinting and like, you know, his numbers are absolutely incredible in Ligue 1. And I don't, it's not meant to be disrespect to Ligue 1, but like Mbappe is, I think, the best player in the world.
Sure.
And Ligue 1 is not the best league in the world. But what is it like to have to compete physically with much more aggressive players, much more physically gifted players every single week, and with a higher quality of coaching? Because objectively, the standard of coaching in the Premier League is really, really good right now. Mm-hmm. Like, you can keep going down the league, and the eighth best manager in the Premier League is probably like, it's like probably like Sean Dyche or someone who's actually a really good coach. Whereas the eighth best manager in like Ligue 1, I have no idea who it is, but it's not going to be particularly impressive. The same goes for La Liga. Like, because when you go down the league, you look at the managerial appointments that clubs like Sevilla are forced to make, and they're really not that impressive. It's like going back to the well of previous appointments, or it's like taking a bit of a swing on somebody. So I don't know. I just, it would have been really interesting to see, what do Brighton do to try and deal with Mbappe? What does Sean Dyche do to try and deal with Mbappe? And who knows? Like, some of those people would be successful. Like, he's not going to score a hat trick every game. I don't know. That would have been interesting to me. And I do think that would have also pushed him to a higher level.
It's kind of boring the way he's just going to go and score like a hat trick against like some shit team in La Liga. Yeah, and then everyone's going to be like, this is the same as Liga. Whereas Premier League would have been far more difficult. And I think he'll still have the same question marks. That even whether those question marks are valid or not, everyone's saying like he's not done it in a top league yet. I still think large amounts of those question marks will still be there. Although I think a lot of the public will still view La Liga as like a truly top league, even though it's in a proper like, not in the mud at the minute, but it's not what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will say the questions have like gone away because they perceive like La Liga and Real Madrid as just like this much, much higher level. And even if he does exactly the same stuff in the Champions League that he does now, if he does it for Real Madrid, that will probably be enough to like get a bunch of people to say like, oh, you know, I'd underrated him, but now he's incredible, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I don't know. I guess, obviously, if he wins the Champions League, which he's got a much better chance of doing, because if Ancelotti says that, Ancelotti's a fantastic coach and the squad is like pretty staggering. Like, the Real Madrid squad is bananas, really.
Yeah.
Like, another forward is what's been missing from it. And if that forward is Mbappe, then...
And they're all pretty young, like, as well. Or lots of those parts are really young. So
you look at them and you're like, this team could easily win like a bunch of Champions Leagues. Yeah. And I guess that'll be enough. But whether we'll see Mbappe be the absolute best he could have been is a more interesting question. So shall we talk a little bit about PSG post Mbappe? Because the superstar experiment at PSG, there's always been debate about how much it's worked, right? Because it did raise their profile and they did really smart stuff, you know, like when they started putting the jump man on their kits and stuff, you're like, this is like, it was cool. They have made PSG cool. And I've been on, you know, sometimes you go on holiday and you'll see someone wearing like a PSG shirt or the PSG shorts, you know, with the cool kind of like pattern around the side. And you think, okay, that's a kind of success for PSG.
Yeah. I mean, I have a PhD training top just because it looked cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
I was like, it's a nice top.
Mm.
So, yeah, it puts them on the map.
But isn't that, that's what you could say about PSG, right? It's like, it's a nice kit.
Yeah.
If only there was a team to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice kit, full stop. I bought it in the same way I go into Coles and go, that's a nice t-shirt, I'm going to buy that.
Not because of any allegiance to like what Coles like represents. Yeah. So it just feels like the superstar experiment, I guess it got more eyes on them, but it basically made them a bit of a mockery. And because they didn't win, they needed to win the Champions League to say to everybody, no, this worked, fuck you. And it never happened. And they jizzed a load of money on superstars. And sure, there was a season there where they had Neymar, Mbappe and Messi. And it wasn't
And nobody cared. Nobody cared because they didn't win anything significant. They won, they won the league. Sure, who cares?
So in a way, like now the thing you'd hope is that they get to build a team in a bit more, with a bit less scrutiny. Obviously, they made a lot of moves last summer. Like they added Gonzalo Ramos and they added Randall Kolo Muani. And already we're talking about who they could like replace Mbappe with when theoretically they went and got the replacements last year. But they've got Ousmane Dembele there. They've got Warren Zaire-Emery, though his contract's up, I think, in 2025. There's still a ton of talent there. And it is an opportunity to create more of a balanced side. Because as much as we like Mbappe, there is like one massive issue with Mbappe, which is like he is a passenger defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And a really good team can deal with that. Like that should be no problem at Real Madrid. But PSG never quite worked out a way to deal with it. And now, maybe they can just build a good side with a bunch of good players and see where they are in 3 years. And you won't have that whole thing of like, here are a bunch of the most expensive players of all time. Why aren't they winning the Champions League?
Yeah. I mean, so where do you think, where do you see them going then? Do you think they need a replacement? Or how do you, because obviously, right, they're not only are they, they're going to get no money for Mbappe too, really, realistically. Mm. But depending which way you look at it, could be quite a, it's quite a profitable move because they're getting essentially 200 million euros back each year by not having him in the squad.
Yeah, and they're losing about like 1.3xG per 90.
So,
like, which is, it's a lot. I mean, that said, they're not really losing that because obviously it's not like Mbappe's going off the pitch and they're just going to play 10 men. Like 10. Somebody's going to play.
Yeah.
And Ramos is good. Muani's good. Ousmane Dembele is fantastic. Like, mm-hmm. there's a bunch of shit here that they can do stuff with. I think the real question is, like, can they get a superstar who's useful? If they can, sure, go ahead and do it. Money means nothing to you. If you can't, I would be thinking instead about, what do I do to make this squad better overall? It's kind of the same as the Man United outlook, which we will come on to in the paid episode, which is, what decisions can we make that makes it more likely that we will win a Champions League in the next 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that should be the question at PSG. And not that we win the Champions League next year, but that we win the Champions League in the next 5 years and that we remain competitive the rest of the time. So if you can go and get Victor Osimhen, and I think we have to talk about Osimhen because he's the most attractive name on the market. He's playing in at a club that's a great club, but is objectively slightly below super club level.
Yeah.
You imagine that they'd sell for a prince's ransom. PSG are perfectly happy to ransom some princes. I think this is like the obvious guy to go for if you must sign someone. But if you can't get somebody like him, I start to wonder. I start to think, is it really worth going and like spunking a bunch of money on, I don't know, maybe a sort of B plus winger who's a big name? I'm not sure. Anyway, we'll come on to that. But let's talk about Osimhen. Like, is this who you think they should go for? I mean, is he number one on the targets list?
I mean, it depends which way you look at it. I think you can 100% make an argument for Osimhen because, you know, he's just turned 25. He's a good age. He's got, you know, he's coming into his peak years. He's had an amazing season last year. He has
played in Ligue 1 previously.
Yeah. And he has had a bit of a down season this year, but that could be for a number of reasons. Could just be a hangover from an amazing season last year where they ran away with the league and Napoli won their first league title in 30-odd years. But it also could just be the fact that Spalletti left and it destabilised the club a little bit. Or he's just not playing quite as well. But he has proven that he is a truly top quality player. My biggest concern with that, with bringing in Osimhen, is whether you actually need to. or whether you can take that money and spend it elsewhere in the squad and do more good. Because, like you said, they have just brought in Randall Colomuani. They've got Goncalo Ramos. These are players who are 25 and 22, respectively. They are also of good age, who were bought essentially as a backup plan for Mbappe if he leaves. Like, PSG aren't going to be shafted if Mbappe leaves or if Mbappe goes off injured or whatever. They are bought as the kind of some form of succession plan, out with going out and getting another superstar as soon as Mbappe leaves. So they've gone and they've got the best players in the world before and spent shitloads of money doing it. And it's got them nowhere, really. Okay, like you said, okay, it's increased the profile of the club, sure. But in terms of winning the Champions League, which is realistically what we're talking about here, when we're talking about justifying their spend or analysing whether they're successful or not, it pretty much comes down to, do they win the Champions League or not? Have they won the Champions League or not? And they didn't win the Champions League. So therefore, there's a reasonable argument to be made that all that money they spent on those Galactico-style signings was a waste. Mm-hmm. Given that they have two very, very good, potentially great, young, in Ramos's case, very young, he's only 22, players who they brought in that can play through the middle, they've already got them in the squad. Do you need to bring in Victor Osimhen for however much it will cost? I think his buyout clause is just over £100 million, which, okay, sure. It gets a bit annoying talking about fees with PSG, because largely, like, to us it matters, or to football fans it'll generally matter because it's just how you codify the transfer market, but realistically to PSG I suppose it doesn't matter at all.
Well, it's a problem for them in squad terms. Like, as in, if Luis Enrique gets handed another striker who costs £100 million and he's got £150 million worth of attackers already on the bench, it's going to be almost impossible for him to keep that squad in check. And Luis Enrique is the kind of guy who wants the squad to be in check. Like, he's a bit of a disciplinarian.
Mm.
So if the squad falls apart, you know, everybody's bitching about their game time, Luis Enrique will just walk. And PSG start to get quite low down on the list of managers who they want, you know? Like, there was a time when going to PSG was quite attractive. Now, I think everybody thinks, well, I'm not sure that I want any part of that. And the managerial market is not particularly stacked right now.
Especially since Pochettino's experience there. You know, they don't have the best track record of being an amazing club to manage.
Yeah, they'd have to go and, like, say to someone like Nagelsmann, assuming he doesn't go to somewhere like Liverpool, okay, come in and, like, we'll give you some control, or we'll give you, like, so much money. Like it would be... this is kind of where they are. And, like, I like Nagelsmann. I think Nagelsmann's a really good manager. But it's not quite the same as when they were able to pull some of the best coaches in the world. Like, there was a time when Mourinho was clearly angling for that job. I mean, they could go and get Mourinho, I guess. There were times when a lot of managers were interested. The fact Pochettino went, the fact that Tuchel went, is really, you know, a testament to the pulling power they developed. I think that pulling power, if Luis Enrique walked out the door saying this is a basket case, would seriously, seriously fall off a cliff. The issue is that I just think also it's really hard for them to assess the talent they have, because Muani's numbers are incredible. Like, he's got 8 goals and assists in like 800 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So he hasn't played very much, but he's scoring all the time. He's at like 0.8 XG per 90. But if you actually look at the numbers, he's taking 1.6 shots a game. And his average shot quality is like 0.33 XG per shot, which is double what it was last season at Eintracht Frankfurt. What does that tell you? Because it tells me that he's playing sub-minutes against pub teams. Like, that is what it tells me.
That shot quality is triple the average quality of the Premier League.
It's absolutely insane. That's how outrageous. High it is. 0.33.
Every three shots he's taking, he's expected to score a goal.
Yeah, because I think Opta's threshold for what counts as a big chance is 0.4. So almost every shot he takes is a big chance. Isn't that crazy? So, that, I don't know, that's suggestive to me that, like, well, it's not really suggestive of anything. It's more that I just think, if Mwani starts in this team, what do you get? Do you get a guy who's 0.8 XG per 90? Do you get a guy who's 0.6?
Mm.
Or do you get a guy who's like 0.4 or something, and now suddenly we're in trouble? And you kind of don't know, because the thing about someone like Mbappe, and this was always true of Messi and Ronaldo too, is that having a superstar actually, like, the tide lifts all boats. So everybody's numbers go through the roof. Like, we used to see it at Barcelona when guys like Pedro was a good player. But guys like Pedro and even youngsters who would come through, like Teo and Cuenca, these people would come in and put up numbers because they got drawn into the orbit of like this incredible superstar who was not just a great striker, but also an amazing associative player. Well, Mbappe is not Messi, but his associative play is also incredible. Like he's in the top, I think, 3 or 4% for XG assisted per 90, as well as, you know, for his own shot taking. He is a guy who just kind of like facilitates your attack in every possible way. Amazing ball carrier, great in the one-on-one, really good creator, as well as being a goal machine. You take him out of that side, you don't know. Like it's not just a matter of putting someone in who's a bit worse than Mbappe, but everybody else around Mbappe retains their output. Mm. Everybody else's output probably goes down significantly, as well as the person who comes in to replace Mbappe being quite a lot worse than Mbappe. So you have no idea how big the drop's going to be. Is it going to be 10%? Is it going to be 30%? Like, honestly, we don't know. So I do kind of understand being a little bit scared and maybe thinking let's drop some money on somebody who looks like a superstar, because I think Osimhen is a superstar. I just don't think they could do it with Mane and Ramos. I think they've got to dance with the one that brought them, you know? I think they've just got to maintain with those guys for at least a year. And then at least in 2020, whatever year it is, 2025, they can go back to the market. And if Mane and Ramos haven't been good enough, they can say, guys, like, I'm sorry, but you're going to the fucking bench. Like, you've scored 10 goals in Ligue 1.
I think that's completely fair, because they've gone out and they've splashed up the money and bought the best players, and it's not won them the one thing that they want.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Victor Osimhen would or wouldn't do that, but it is kind of the same approach that they've tried before.
Mm-hmm.
Go out, mm-hmm. Who is the best player available in the market? Let's go buy them, put them in the team, and let's see if we win the Champions League. They've done that, and it hasn't worked. So, realistically, what are the risks of them running with Mane as their starting centre-forward this year? Maybe they don't win Ligue 1. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And then you can go back and go, okay, we are still an incredibly rich club, and our stature in European football hasn't dropped so much in a year that we can't still go and throw an absolute ton of money at some of the best players available, and some of them will come. We might not be the biggest pool in the world, but we'll still probably, given the amount of money we have and the fact that we're putting everything into winning the Champions League, and you can pretty much guarantee that you'll win domestic titles, we will still be probably top 10 most attractive clubs in Europe.
Yeah,
we can go and make something happen next season. So yeah, I fully agree that like bringing in Osimhen could be good, but they thought that about the Messi, Mbappe, Neymar project, and it didn't get the one thing they wanted. It feels like it's time for just at least try something different. They've got some really exciting young prospects in that squad. Give them minutes and see what happens. You also got to convince Zaire Emery.
Yeah.
You've got to convince him to stay as well. He's out of contract next year, and he looks like an absolute world beater. With Mbappe gone, frees up a load of cash. Not that they're cash strapped, but you could offer him a fat contract and say, we're going to build a team around you. We're going
to
trust.
I think they need to do that.
In you, like, you're going to roll up a dump truck with a and just fill his fucking yard with whatever he wants, and
sure.
Say this is we're building a team around you. We are putting our trust in like youth. You're the main one of that, and then just see what happens. And if they do need to go out and add superstars to help that, sure, okay, but at least see what happens and have a little bit more understanding of the actual capabilities of the players in your squad post Mbappe.
And it doesn't take that much. Like, I mean, if you buy a bunch of these guys who are like 20 to 24, like Arsenal have done this, and Arsenal are the second best team in the Champions League this season. Like,
yeah,
better than Bayern, better than Real Madrid. Doesn't mean they're going to go further than those teams. But Arsenal have just done that by just like buying young players. And obviously they've got a good coach. But Luis Enrique is a good coach. And if PSG just continue to buy young, good players, all it takes is 1 year where it comes together. And they don't have to win the Champions League to be taken seriously. If they build a team that is not just like a money pit, you know, that isn't just like the biggest names on the market chucked together in a way that doesn't make sense. But if they build an actual team, and then 1 year, you know, like they beat Man City in the Champions League, you know, they beat Real Madrid over two legs, people will take notice. And suddenly you're like a serious side. And that's kind of what they need. Like, they need to build a team seriously, And then they just need a few signature results and you can start to get taken seriously. It really doesn't take that long. Mm-hmm. So we agree about like pulling up the dump truck to Warren Zaire Emery's house. What do you think though about other options? Because if we're not going to go for an out and out striker necessarily, there are obviously rumours about a left winger. Does that appeal to you more or do you spend the money elsewhere? Like what of the names that are rumoured, which interests you?
I think you go either way. I think if you're going to go for an attacker, if you feel that the drop off of your attack is going to be so staggering that you're not going to be able to cope with it and it's going to have so significant an impact on your attacking output that you need to rectify it or you need to do some form of even just stop gap, I would be more open to some form of left winger than I would a central forward. And
okay, I think that's fair.
One of the names that I think, it might be a little bit left field, but I find it kind of interesting, is Marcus Rashford. Because I think you mentioned about 10 minutes ago about like a B-plus player, like a B player in the world. I think Marcus Rashford kind of fits that bill. And obviously he's like Mr. Man United, but I don't necessarily believe that things are quite as rosy at Old Trafford for Rashford this season than they have in previous years. You know, he's not playing that well this season. He's also had his own like disciplinary issues off the pitch. He recently went out on a night out in Belfast and just missed training the next day, and I think he was fined like £500,000 for it. You know, whoa. I think he went out, I think he was seen partying in November, I think, but after United lost 3-0 to City, you know, like there are issues there with his behaviour, and it makes me question just how sold he is on the whole project, if he's just thinking, I could go somewhere else, you know, I don't know. I think the fact that he is one of the most senior players in the squad, the fact that he's one of United's best players, the fact that he's an academy product, it adds, there's a lot of added pressure on him because he typifies what Manchester United think they still are. Like, we produce these amazing Premier League players. Like, we have, like, the class of 92 extension, when in actual fact, it's actually quite a rare academy product of recent years. So I think there is a lot more pressure on him than necessarily would be fair. And also, he's just not playing that well this season. From a United perspective, would it be the worst thing? Probably not. Because again, his output hasn't been great so far this season. And with the new financial regulations, he's an academy product. Whatever they sell him for, if they sell him, is pure profit. So they have more money to work with than they would if they were just selling, say, a Bruno Fernandes. So I think there are reasons that it makes sense to all parties involved. And I'm not saying it'll happen, but I don't think I'd be that shocked if it did. Because I don't know, like, judging by his body language, how he's playing, there was a clip that went viral last week when he played against Luton of him pressing Ross Barkley. And I don't know if you've seen it, but it's atrocious. Like, he basically just walks around at him and then just lets Ross Barkley like walk past him. And I mean walk past him in United's half. I mean, like, he does not run. He just walks past Marcus Rashford, who is at the top of the press. So everything doesn't necessarily see. He doesn't seem totally happy at United. His behaviour kind of indicates that. His performances indicate that. His intensity in parts of games recently have indicated that. Maybe it is time for something new.
His numbers are crap this season.
They are.
Crap. But they
were great
before that,
last
obviously
season.
He's got double figures in four of the last full seasons.
He is undoubtedly still a good player. Also, from a player who has been able to do what he has done in the Premier League, moving to Liga, like, he would destroy some teams.
Yeah, he would. I mean, I love the player. I just think it would cost so much to get him out of Man United, and he's 26. There'd be a part of me that would be like, can we put down this money and get like Martinelli, who is not a dissimilar player?
No,
has been linked with PSG before, actually. Great intensity, much younger because he's 22.
Yeah.
Probably lower wages, well, definitely lower wages because he's not paid £300,000 a week currently. And Arsenal, if Arsenal thought they could go and turn that money around and get someone like Rafael Leao, Arsenal would probably take it.
Yeah, but
I don't think Arsenal want to sell Martinelli, there are options on the market like Nico Williams, like Rafael Leao, that would maybe make them less worried about selling him.
I think
especially the form of Leandro Trossard as well.
The problem with that, though, is if I was Martinelli, I would look at Arsenal and I'd be like, this is a good project I want to stay at.
I agree.
I'm Marcus Rashford, sure. I'm not as certain. And he certainly doesn't look as certain this season, whether he's still invested in this project. So
yeah, but I mean, even if he's not invested in the project, like, he is so invested in, like, the club and the city. And I don't think, again, it takes that much. Like as in, if Jim Ratcliffe sits him down and says, we're going to, and again, we don't want to step on the toes of our paid episode here. But if Jim Ratcliffe sits him down, he's like, you know, we're going to, like, we're thinking about putting, like, hot and cold running water in Old Trafford. And maybe a roof in parts
of
it.
Yeah.
Like, and a pitch, stuff like that. Like, Rashford might be like, oh, that sounds good. Like, maybe we should do that. Like, if they say we're getting real football people in, and it does look like they're getting some people in who might know what the fuck they're doing, then that might turn Rashford around as well. So even if he maybe doesn't like the manager, or maybe doesn't feel like he fits into the game plan perfectly, or wonders how long it's going to take for the club to get his act to get its act together, I don't know. I still think that, and people always say that, like, we're biased against, like, Ligue 1 when we say something like, how much is Rashford going to care about going there and winning a medal? But I think that's an accurate representation as well of, like, the football environment that we've been raised in is also the football environment Marcus Rashford's been raised in.
Yeah.
And I do think that he'll probably be like, I can go and win Ligue 1.
I can win a domestic title and have a good run in the Champions League.
But no one that I care about is really going to care. No one that I care about is going to be like, oh my God, he massively improved his career because he went there and did that. That's the thing.
Yeah. It depends.
I agree that it's harder for Martinelli because Arsenal are in a better spot right now. Yeah. And he looks around at the players and he's like, I know these guys,
well.
I play
he's
well,
like,
with these guys. Like,
you know, in 4 years, I'll be at my peak when Arsenal could be legitimately, like, title contenders every year.
Yeah, and people like Odegaard will still be under 30.
Yeah.
Saka will be like 25, 26.
Yeah.
Saliba will be 25. Like when I'm at my peak, all these guys will be at their peak. I've genuinely, like, in theory, unless something, like, catastrophic goes wrong, I might have 5-6 years here of this team competing for the biggest trophies in the game. And that's assuming that they don't replace other people when they hit 30, but they should do.
Whereas,
you know, like, you could have 10 years where you're just one of the better teams in Europe.
Whereas with Rashford's 26 now. So even if, say, it takes United 4 or 5 seasons to get back to, like, a truly decent team, not even like a title contending team, just like decent, a good Champions League team, Rashford's going to be 30, 31. So
yeah, but fucking, dude, like, if you said, okay, like, cards on the table, like, who the fuck thinks PSG are going to win the Champions League in the next 5 years?
I don't think they are, but they will win Ligue 1.
Because they're probably not.
They will win Ligue 1. So,
oh, great.
It's essentially the Harry Kane thing, right? He stayed at Spurs, won nothing, win the Bundesliga, might not win the Bundesliga.
he was a lot older. And Bayern are a way bigger draw than PSG. Like, Bayern are a fucking, they're an historic club. PSG is, like, younger than my dad. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just, I mean, I'd love to live in Paris. That'd be great. But, like, yeah. I don't know. Go to Bayern. Bayern's a fucking serious team with serious fans that's in the Champions League every year that demands to compete for the best trophies. And you also look at people like Jamal Musiala and you're like, yeah, there's a future here. There's both heritage and a future. Whereas going to PSG, you're like, I don't know, like, Luis Enrique could get annoyed and quit and Warren Zaire-Emery could run down his contract and then it's just me, like, playing with a bunch of, like, fucking, like, dairy farmers in a completely irrelevant league and everyone's like, while Man United maybe slowly get better.
Mm.
And if when I'm 31, I've won, like, Ligue 1 3 times, haven't won the Champions League and, like, United are really fucking good, I'll be pissed off. I'll be like, I should have stayed. Because it's no guarantee United get good. But if in 4 or 5 years they are, like, it wouldn't be surprising. They've got tons of money. They've got more money than anybody else, and except City. And, you know, Arsenal went from being, like, absolutely dog shit to really good in 4 years. It's been 4 years. In less time, in fact, they did it in 3.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here, like, just because I feel like Rashford is just, he's fucking Mancunian, like, and his connection with the city is more than the club, like, also his campaigning and stuff, like, obviously he's connected to the people of Manchester too. It feels like the Rafael Leão link maybe makes more sense for everybody.
Yeah.
Again, another guy like just like Osimhen, like another Lille guy. So somebody else who's played in Ligue 1 before, he probably speaks French. I presume he speaks French. Again, at a club where he's kind of achieved what he could achieve. Mm-hmm. You know, by winning a Scudetto with them, like that's his special achievement there. I kind of feel like he's got nothing else to do there. They're not going to win the Champions League. They could win another Scudetto, but they're not going to, because, like, certainly not this year, but I mean generally, like, because there are a bunch of teams that are just better than them.
Yeah.
And he is genuinely a superstar. Even though his numbers are worse this season, like as in like his top line numbers, I think his underlying numbers have been really, really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And also PSG could probably make a role to fit him. He's much more of an all-rounder than Rashford is. Rashford is basically a forward who plays wide, whereas Leao can do a load of winger stuff.
Yeah. Like Rashford's only ever looking to cut in.
Rashford is not like your wide creator.
No.
Whereas Leao can be a ball carrier, like he can be a one-on-one threat, he can create, but really he does want to be an inside forward. And at PSG they'll say, you can do Mbappe shit. Like, you're just going to be our Mbappe. Do whatever you want. And it'll probably be great.
He's one of those players that, like, it's kind of chaotic in how he plays football, but it's like,
sure.
It's just so fun to watch. And he, you know, I think it was the year they won the Scudetto, he won Serie A Player of the Year. And, you know, his underlying numbers are great. That season, I think he averaged like 3.5 shots a game. He was top 5% for progressive carries. Top 8% for successful take-ons in Serie A this season. Like, he's a truly great attacking force, and yeah, kind of has the kind of pace and the size and the strength to just really impact games. And I don't think there's many of those players out there that every time they get the ball, you're like, right, here we go. Here he goes. And yeah, I think in Liga, he could absolutely kill it. I think he's a really good age, 24. And if you look at like the squad the PSG have, in terms of young players, with like Zaire Emery, who's still a teenager, Nuno Mendes, Ugarte, Ramos, all 22, 21, Muani, Hakimi's only 25 as well, Dembele's still pretty young, 26. Like, if he goes there for a 5-year contract, he'll still be under 30 when he's out of that contract. And all of those players that are really exciting younger prospects will be at their peak or approaching their peak.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and he is the guy. He's the guy who's like gettable, who fills the hole that you've got, and who can combine with the talent you've got in lots of different ways. Yeah, he doesn't just absolutely rule anybody out of the lineup. And yeah, I mean, his shots are down this season. Sure, his XG is down a bit, but his progressive carries are up. His carries into the penalty area are up. His progressive receptions are up. His pass accuracy is up. His chance creation is up. His passes into the penalty area are up. Like, he's doing all this stuff on a side that is getting worse.
Yeah.
Which I think is a sign of really elite level talent. And he's a game breaker in the way that Mbappe is. Like, not at the same level, not with the same consistency. But right now, if you take Mbappe out of this PSG side, and PSG came up against a good team in the Champions League, I don't know, like Napoli or something,
mm-hmm,
you would kind of say, who is the player who's going to create something out of nothing if Mbappe isn't there? And you'd sort of think it's going to be Ousmane Dembele, unless there's something funky going on with tactics, you know, and like Hakimi gets forward. But really, who is like the stardust in that side? It's Ousmane Dembele. If you put in Leao as well, then you'd say, okay, that's another real problem. Like, there's no team in the world that can just say, we don't worry about Leao. Like, he's too good for that.
Yeah.
And that is the sort of player that they need. And the fact that age-wise, it all lines up too. I just think if they're going to go out and spunk a bunch of money this summer, Leao is the obvious guy to go for. I think he's the perfect guy for them to go and get. I think he's available. He's a good age. He's got a great profile. And it's just easy to see how he fits into this team. The other thing they could do is just say, we're not going to do anything crazy. Mm-hmm. We're going to go and add a few small interesting pieces to the squad. We're going to deal with some of our weaknesses, maybe get in another midfielder, you know, that kind of thing, and just slowly build. Because, you know, we talk about where Real Madrid are now, but Real Madrid didn't get where they are now just by buying superstars. Like, they got Vinicius and Rodrigo when they were kids out of Brazil. They got Camavinga when he was super young. Like, they gradually did this in a really smart way. They picked up Rudiger. Rudiger was on a free, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, so So they've slowly built this squad, and then they were in a position where they were like, right, now we're going to drop a star in the middle. We're going to spend a fortune on Bellingham. We're going to spend a fortune on Mbappe. Mm-hmm. And those guys are going to come in and just like take this team to the next level. In the meantime, we've gone and got people like Alaba on a song. Like, so PSG maybe could stand to do that too. Make some smart moves on people with contracts expiring or who are available for cheap, and then just sort of take stock in a year and build really slowly. Yeah. What do you think? I mean, like...
No, I feel like... I think the most... To it, right. Because of the attacking... Okay, they've lost Mbappe, but because of the attacking backup they already have in their squad, and they're getting players like Xavi Simons back from when his loan finishes.
Yeah, I forgot about him, actually.
So, you know, like, he'll come back into that squad, and he's a very good player playing... Has the capability of playing out wide, up top. So, they have components there that are very, very good and very young. They could probably add, you know, maybe a DM, upgrade a DM, because... Ugar is good, but he kind of started to look out of his depth in the Champions League.
Yeah.
He's still quite young, you know. It's easy, no offense to Ligue 1, but Ligue 1 hides a multitude of sins. And I think that certain players can get exposed once they get to the Champions League level. You're like, okay, maybe you looked great in Ligue 1, but you're actually average. So I think there are upgrades that could be made elsewhere. Maybe a centre-back that could be made elsewhere that isn't just, okay, we've lost our talismanic attacker, let's go out and get another attacker. I think there's a lot of interesting parts there that you kind of need to see. You kind of need to just give the chance to prove themselves. Just say, you know what, you've got a season now, prove yourself. If nobody steps up, we're going to go out and we're going to spend 150 million euros on an attacker next season, because that's what we need to do. And I don't think it's the worst idea, because all of a sudden one of those players might just explode or might just become the player that the reason you bought them. There is a lot of young talent in that squad, and if they're not getting enough minutes, and also without Mbappe or without a true superstar like Mbappe, you're removing a black hole from that squad and allowing other players to actually try to figure out how they influence games, not how do I help Mbappe influence a game. So I think for me, if I was PSG, I would be like, okay, we'll fill some holes, but not for a huge amount of money. We'll fill some holes that make sense and make the squad better as a whole, as a collective unit. Not necessarily superstar standings, but things that just make sense. And then at the end of this season, we will have a much better idea of what we actually need to do to win the Champions League in 4 years.
I think that's smart. And I think if they add another midfielder to Ugarte and Zaire Emery, and then you've got a front line of like Simons, Dembele, and like Muani or Ramos.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Like you have enough to rotate those as well. Like you have enough depth there. Like you could do with a little bit more depth, I suppose. But there's enough depth for you to get by for sure. And all you need is like one or two of them to be like, okay, this is my breakout season, or yeah. I'm showing signs that I'm capable of playing at like a truly high level. That's all you need.
And Simons is a kid.
Yeah, could but happen. Like so many of them are kids. It's like the issue with just the knee jerk. Let's go bring in the next. Let's go bring in the best available attacker. Is that you step on the development and you step on the toes of all of these young kids that could be great, could be genuinely great.
I'm quite excited about the next iteration of PSG. Like, I mean, obviously it depends what they do this summer, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm quite interested. I think if they've learned the lessons from what they've done,
that's a big thing.
If they've thought, you know, we spent all this money, where's it got us? We need to be taken seriously. How do we do that? Bring through guys from the academy. Buy players for under 50 mil instead of like 100 mil. I don't know. I think they could genuinely be really good. They have like beneath their feet, like the greatest football resource in the world, which is Paris, which is truly like quietly the greatest football city in the world. Like there is more talent that comes out of Paris than any other city in world football. Like that is just simply the case.
It is.
There are more players from Paris, I think, playing in the top five leagues than from any other city. And there's one major club there.
Yeah.
And it's a club that no one from Paris gives a fuck about. It's time for that to change. They need to think that through. And if they get it right, and Luis Enrique is a smart guy and a good manager, I don't know. I think there could be something interesting here. So I think they should take this as like a little wake-up call. You know, Mbappe's gone. What's next? Well, what might be next is PSG becoming a proper club. That's what I'd say. All right, let's move on to the Burn book. Pete, Would you like to start, or should I start this week? Should we go in? Should we go out? I will be guided by you.
I'm happy for you to start. Let's go. Let's start on a positive. Let's take something out.
Okay. Valentine's Day recently happened, and every year my wife and I say, "Oh, we're not going to get anything for Valentine's Day," and then every year one of us will say to the other, "Oh, I've got you something for Valentine's Day," and then the other one is like, "Shit!" Like, yeah. And then has to go and like quickly find something. This year, having agreed we wouldn't get anything for Valentine's Day, Emma was the one who broke the rule. So at the moment, you know, like we're kind of weirdly shift sleeping, you know, because of the kids. But lying on the bed waiting for me was this special pillow from my wife, and it's like kind of shaped like a banana. And it's specially for side sleepers.
Yeah.
Because I sleep on my side, and I've also had a lot of lower back problems over the years. And it's actually really difficult to sleep on your side. Like, we got a new mattress at Christmas because I was really suffering. And honestly, my back got better overnight.
Oh, really?
Like, my back was getting really, really bad. Yeah, like, for some... Like, the bed that we had just developed these dips over time, never, like... I don't know if there's a way to get around that, or whether it's inevitably going to happen with every mattress over the years, but it was clearly a massive problem because I was in agony all the time. But also, when you're on your side, your spine isn't like properly aligned. You quite often need to have like one leg up, or your ankles are kind of like on top of one another. Often as well, it's like hard to position your arms because the arm that's on top when you're on your side kind of either comes right across you and like really tenses up your chest, or it's a nightmare. Anyway, they make these pillows for side sleepers. You basically, I suppose you could hug it. You can like put it between your legs. You can like put it up higher so that you can rest your hand on it. And I have been sleeping. I mean, partially I've been sleeping well because like I fall into bed every night exhausted, but it means that I don't have to lie there anymore thinking how uncomfortable I am, or get into a really complicated arrangement of pillows and things. It just works for me. It's just solved a problem. And I do think that presents should either upgrade something that somebody already has or solve a problem for them. That's my attitude.
Upgrade something they already have or solve a problem.
You know, sometimes they're like, they have a coat and it's like, fine, but you're like, I can get you a better coat. Or they're just like, they're persisting. You know, like with Emma, it's stuff like socks. You know, like, I don't know what it is, but like Emma would just be like, I'll be hanging up washing and I'm just like, these t-shirts, these socks, like, fuck all this. Like, this stuff is all in terrible condition. Bin all this shit. Tired. And just spend like 50 quid on 7 new pairs of like underwear, which you could do from like a place like Rapa Nui or something, and just never think about it again. But she won't do it, so I do it for her.
Right, okay.
Or solve a problem they have. So like... something like this, the side sleeper thing, or, you know, getting them a laptop stand or whatever. Like, I know it's not fucking exciting, but it is the sort of shit where suddenly someone's like, you know, Emma would always have a bunch of loose pens in her bag, so I just got her a nice pencil case, and it made her happy. Just get her a nicer one. You get them a nicer one than they would buy themselves.
Functional considerations.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Just upgrade their life. Make their normal... chores a bit less boring and a bit less annoying. That is the way I think
that's
a good thought starter for presents.
That, and also obviously like cheese and brownies and stuff, that goes without saying.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why would you not do that?
But the thing is that's not an upgrade on anything, nor is it solving a problem. You could argue the problem is that they don't have enough cheese or brownies.
Yeah, I'm not saying all presents have to be like this. I'm just saying that when you're thinking about what to get someone, it's a good place to start. Sometimes you're just like, you know what I would fucking love to like open is just like a box of delicious cheese that, again, I would not buy myself. I wouldn't go out and buy myself like a gift box of cheese.
No.
I'd buy like one or two cheeses.
Yeah.
But I'll send somebody like a big gift box of cheese. Somebody, for example.
You sent me a big gift box of cheese. And
yeah, because I knew you'd like it. And I was like, Pete's not going to buy himself a fucking gift box of cheese, is he?
Probably not.
Maybe. You might, actually.
the size of the Lincolnshire poacher wedge in it was genuinely the size of like a tree-felling axe.
I know,
it was like
really
the head of a tree-felling axe. It was huge. Yeah, no, I think this sounds great. I also sleep on my side. I tend to tuck the duvet in between my legs.
Yeah.
As like the kind of the some division between my legs, so they're not like resting on top of each other uncomfortably. It feels more comfortable and it's just more padded. But I do toss and turn a ton all night.
Oh.
So I'm interested.
Sounds like that duvet is getting shown a good time.
Yeah.
Tucked between your legs, tossed and turned.
Yeah. But you know, I imagine just as good a time as your new banana pillow is. Is it banana coloured or is it just banana shaped?
It's banana shaped.
Right, okay.
It's I can actually hang on, I'll show it to you.
it's actually
way
really
bigger
thick
than I thought.
Look how big it is.
That's like four foot?
It's like person size.
Yeah.
But it's but that's perfect because it means it can like
I can put it between my knees and I can also like rest a hand on it up top. And since I've got it though, I just don't think about getting comfortable in bed. That's
it's just the comfortable.
Main thing. I don't spend 5 minutes fannying about.
Trying
more
to find
than 5 minutes.
Position, yeah.
And if I flip from side to side, yeah, it's a little bit annoying, but it's way less annoying than if you finally get into a position in bed with, you know, with the cushion in the right place and the duvet in the right place and everything set up, and then you're like, oh, I want to change sides.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is going to be shit. It now just solves that problem for me. So what it's bought me, actually, as well as comfort, is time. And I think that is our one irreplaceable resource.
Yeah.
What are you taking out of the burn book?
What I'm taking out of the burn book is far less useful. And it's not even so. And it's something I'm far less proud of as well. I can see in your face like how proud you are about this new pillow. I'm not so proud about this. But because what I'm taking out of the burn book this week are pot noodles. And I'm not that thrilled about it. But at some stage last week, I saw a random advert for a pot noodle. And it must have just embedded itself in my subconscious because a few days later, I was hungover and I was like, do you know what? I have got the most random urge for that I haven't had in years is a pot noodle. And
okay.
I went to the shop, I bought two pot noodles and I had one. And let me tell you, Patrick, I don't know what your history is with a pot noodle, but mine's a very, I look at it with great respect from when I was younger. I loved pot noodles when I was growing up. I love pot noodles at university. Haven't had one in years. Let me tell you, they have not changed one bit in a good way. They are still a fantastic, fantastic little meal. Obviously, zero nutritional value, but credit where credit's due. I had an itch to scratch. It was a random itch to scratch, but it did exactly what I wanted it to do. And do you know when I ate the second one? Today.
Immediately after the first one.
No. Jesus Christ. Two King pot noodles in the same day?
Yeah.
Obscene.
What are you? You're a coward.
No, I had the second one today. I was working and I was like, you know what? I've got pot noodle downstairs. Oh, had it for lunch. God. Again, I'm not proud of this, but I did enjoy
You're
it.
You're not ashamed either.
No. I'm not proud of it. But I did enjoy it. And it's weird because it's the kind of pleasure you get from eating something that you know is kind of shit. It's kind of shitty. Both in terms of like nutrition, but also like it's just not a good version of what it's meant to be. It's like not the best version of what it is, but for whatever reason, that makes it like good in its own right. So I love like proper ramen, like your proper like Asian ramen that you would go to like the Chinese supermarket to get all the random flavors, 30, 40p a pack. Those are genuinely decent instant noodles. Pot noodle is not that, but pot noodle just offers something different. And I can't put my finger on it. I can't place what it is, but I think it's like for me, at least, this experience, this most recent experience, epitomized guilty pleasure. But it was also so random, it was like novelty, that I hadn't had one in maybe, I don't know, 10 years, maybe? Was the last time I had a pot noodle?
I guess I do feel like I remember what a pot noodle tastes like.
Yeah.
And I have no real nostalgia for it. Like, it's not a thing that I
care
seek
for.
to re-experience.
Thing is, I didn't either for a decade, and then there's one advert embedded itself in my subconscious, and then a couple of days later I was like, you know what, I want that. And I can't tell you why, but all I know is that I woke up one morning being like, for whatever reason, I just really want a fucking chicken and mushroom pot noodle right now. And yeah, it didn't disappoint. I also tried the Bombay Bad Boy, wasn't quite as good. That the Bombay Bad Boy wasn't as good as I remember. Chicken and mushroom was as good as I remember.
Well, that's good to know. I don't really know what we're meant to do with this, Pete. Like, objectively, I'm not going to have a pot noodle, but I guess that next time Emma says maybe I'm going to get a pot noodle, Maybe I need something to eat. I will recommend a pot noodle.
You recommend a pot noodle. And then
I was just trying to look up the list of flavors. Like, have they added anything interesting to the lineup since we were kids?
I think there's like, beef like and tomato and curry.
Oh, the beef and tomato is disgusting.
I don't think I've ever had it.
I can still taste the beef and tomatoes.
I don't think I've ever had it. I've always was chicken and mushroom, nothing else. And then the Bombay Bad Boy came out, I don't know, 20 years ago maybe. Like, it came out a good while after the chicken and mushroom was a staple. Bombay Bad Boy was like the fancy new one that came out like years after. That was all right. The other ones I don't think I ever really sampled. Maybe a curry one once, but no. They never really...
Didn't they have like a pizza flavoured one or something?
I don't remember that. Weird. But I think when chicken and mushroom's so good, you don't really need to venture from it.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Look, I've got issues with this. But I mean, it's mostly about the fact that I'm not in a position to experience it. Like, I just think that there's going to be a load of shit that I can't eat in a in the modern pot noodle.
Mm.
So,
yeah, I doubt I'll have another pot noodle for years. So this is a very freeing moment, but it was one that happened this week or in the last 2 weeks that I was like, you know what? Credit where credit's due. For what it's worth, I enjoyed that.
Credit where credit's due. Yeah, congratulations. You know what? We went to, it's not pot noodle. What the fuck's it called?
Super Noodles.
Yeah, we went to the is it Super Noodles? No.
Super Noodles are like the pack that you make in the there is no pot with them.
Went to the Noodle Museum in Japan.
Okay. Yeah.
Where you can like design your own like pot that they go in.
Okay.
And then you can determine like the flavors and shit you want in it. It was great. Like it was an experience. I'll have to find somewhere. Cup noodles. They're just called cup noodles. Yeah. Like Nissin cup noodles. So yeah, I designed my own my own little pot. I don't remember what I had in it. Probably nothing. But I don't know. I don't know why I've told you that story. But I just thought that as like a lover of the pot noodle, you would maybe appreciate the fact that I went to Ground Zero for pot noodles.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And was it worth it? It clearly wasn't that memorable.
At the time, I think it was in Osaka. Yeah, it was in Osaka. Mm. It was a great time. Great time was had by all. There you go. I don't fucking know, man. Who knows? Okay, let's move on. Let's move on because we're getting off piste. Okay. What are we moving on to? What's coming into the burn book?
Mm.
What I'm putting in the burn book this week, Pete? It's the sugar tax.
Interesting.
The sugar tax was a bad idea. It was a stupid paternalistic idea. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a bad one. So for people who don't live in the UK, or people who live in the UK but don't care, basically like an extra levy was raised on products containing like X amount of sugar a few years ago. I don't remember exactly when it happened, but essentially the idea was we need to reduce sugar in stuff and maybe it'll make our population less obese. That we don't know if that worked, but it probably didn't. And it meant that if you wanted to put over a certain amount of sugar in a product, you had to pay extra essentially. And what that meant is that a load of companies, a load of products said, well, we're not going to do that. So they just made their products with less sugar. So essentially overnight, a bunch of drinks went from a normal kind of sugar level to not sugar-free, but fairly low sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Some remained. Obviously, Coke still distribute Coke with its like original sugar level. But it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to get Sprite now in the UK that has the original sugar level. Like if you buy Sprite, it'll be basically Sprite Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true across the board. And there are pleasures that this has ruined. And I don't think we've got much in return. So I used to very occasionally buy myself a root beer or a cream soda or something from a place that would sell them. Those are all now essentially sugar-free because they're not made by the Coca-Cola company and therefore they can't afford to pay the sugar tax. And that means that they're just like not delicious. They taste of like, they just taste fucking sugar-free. And if I want a sugar-free drink, I will drink water. But I don't drink that much soda. Once in a while, I would like to have a nice one. Sprite, like I say, a real casualty of this is San Pellegrino.
Ooh.
The blood orange San Pellegrino, the limonata, like these were so delicious, like citrusy, sharp, but also incredibly sweet. like an actual lemon is. You know, like really sharp, really sweet. It was delicious. Now they basically taste sugar-free. They taste of fucking nothing. They're rubbish. And also I would say that going along with the sugar tax, and this is not quite the same thing, there have been times, have you experienced this, where I've ordered a Coke in a restaurant and they've just brought me a Coke Zero. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And I have queried it before and it's just like, oh, that's what we have. And I'm like, well, say that then. I wouldn't have ordered it like if I was going to get a Coke Zero, because I don't want a fucking Coke Zero. I'd rather drink water.
That's never happened to me, but only because I never drink full sugar Coke.
Yeah, you're like, bring me a Guinness.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I drink. 100% of my hydration
is Guinness. No, I'm a, if I drink a soft drink, I always drink the sugar-free version. I'm indoctrinated to the sugar-free soft drinks.
Sure, but if you ordered one that was not sugar-free and they gave you a sugar-free one, you'd be like...
Well, yeah, it's given me something I haven't ordered.
Yeah, you'd be like, what the fuck do you call this? This is a disgrace. Yeah, it's just a very strange thing. And I think it's all based on this idea of just like, we can stop people wanting sugar. And to some degree, generally speaking, my feeling was always that you can't legislate people into better behavior. And actually, that isn't really true, because like with smoking, for example, the UK pretty successfully managed to stop a lot of people taking up smoking by making it very, very hard to smoke in public places. Like,
so few people smoke now compared to when we were like teenagers.
When we were kids, like loads of our peers smoked.
Yeah.
People would smoke in pubs, and like there'd be crowds of people outside work. And that does obviously still happen to some degree, but the level that it was at before was so much more than it is now. And
to the point where you go like abroad, where you go to like mainland Europe, it's shocking how many people you see smoke. Or I'm shocked by the amount of people I see smoking.
Emma and I always talk about this. Like when we're in Paris, we're just like, oh yeah, young people are smoking here. Whereas in the UK, like very, very few young people smoke anymore. We were thinking about which of our friends smoking, and I was like, I don't think I have any friends that smoke anymore.
I don't think I have any.
Like, my last few friends who smoked gave up, went on to vape, then went on to nothing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think that that's kind of the norm now. So, so there is some success, I guess, to like just making it very difficult for people to do this. But I do just, but I think sugar is embedded deeper in people than fucking smoking is. And it does just feel a little bit like, we're going to tell you what's good for you. We're going to tell you that you can't have this thing anymore. And I think it's one thing to like put a warning on it or to make it harder to get hold of if you really must. But to make it so some things that people like, I'm sorry, but nobody was drinking so many San Pellegrinos that it was going to kill them. And if they do, that's their fucking right. Like, I'm sorry, but it just pisses me off. So anyway, I think that the sugar tax was, a kind of like wanky, stupid idea at the time. And what it's actually done is meant that like on the very rare occasions that I think, oh, I would like, you know, a blood orange San Pellegrino, I'm like, I can't have it because it doesn't fucking exist anymore in the way that it used to. Isn't that tragic?
And it's totally worth spiking adult onset diabetes for it. I
yeah.
Across the nation.
I should be allowed to like fucking have it. And if that kills a few people, it's like, NMFP. Anyway, I just think I've seen it's sad, Pete. I think it's sad. I think it's the fucking nanny state, bro.
I agree with the freedom of choice, but I've not really been affected by this because I've just never been the full sugar drinker of any of these soft drinks.
Ooh, aren't you sophisticated? Like,
well, it's not even that. It's just that I would feel like a waste of consuming the sugar. I feel like if I'm going to consume that sugar, I want to consume that amount of sugar in sweets.
Yeah, but not once in a while. Like if you just want a Coke, like there's just a time sometimes where you're like, I just want a Coke. Well, now you better want a Coke, because if you want anything else, you can't get the fucker. Like, okay, like grape soda as well, that I think is like a really delicious pleasure. Like it's literally like when you're on holiday, you think I might have one. When you're having a special meal, you think I might want one. You can't get one anymore. They're going to bring you a fucking Coke Zero, or they're going to bring you a Diet Coke. If you were to order as well, like a rum and Coke or something, they'll give you a rum and Diet Coke. And a rum and Diet Coke is disgusting. Like all those sodas, if you get, I mean, I haven't really been drinking these for quite a long time, but if you get a soda as a mixer, it only works if it's full sugar. It doesn't work when it's diet. So if you have like a rum and diet Coke, it's genuinely just not delicious at all. This really pisses me off, Pete.
I can see you getting visibly annoyed.
Look, but... I don't like it. Mm. I just think it's not right. Anyway, tell me what you're fucking talking about. I don't know.
Well, I think you'll be pissed off in mine as well, because what I'm putting in the burn book this week are people who stay on the same gym equipment for ages. Because this really pisses me off, and it happened last week. So,
oh God,
for whatever unfortunate reason, I was in the gym and there was another man in the gym, and we were largely doing very similar exercises that required similar machines or gym apparatus. And okay, I worked out much faster than he worked out, and the gym wasn't overly well equipped. So, like, you know, it only had one lat pull down machine, and he was using it when I wanted it. So I was like, okay, I'll go and, you know, do something else that I was going to do after that, and I'll come back. And I went away for like 15 minutes, came back, and he was still sitting on the lat pull down machine. And I was like, you've been on that machine for like 25 minutes. Like, what could you possibly be doing? And then slightly later, he was on one of the preacher curl benches. And this is when it got really bad, because there were two preacher curl benches, and for whatever reason, they were taken up by two people who were taking absolute ages. Now, I have no idea how many sets.
This is already making me cross.
I had no idea how many sets they were doing. But the guy who I'd previously seen before, he was doing a set of preacher curls and then supersetting them with like dumbbell curls, and then waiting
like an idiot
three plus minutes in between sets. Like, it was getting to the stage of like powerlifter breaks between sets, where they go and have a fucking 3-course meal and come back and do a second set.
Yeah, because of the enormous stress on your central nervous system that doing fucking bicep curls.
And I was looking at him like, you're not lifting enough weight to justify taking this amount of break in between sets.
It's bicep curls. They're some of the smallest muscles in your body.
And then the other guy beside him was doing, essentially, he had the easy curl bra. He did a set of bicep curls and then stood up and then started doing like a weird full body. It was kind of like a, you know, the bar pull up, where you kind of work your lats, like your narrow grip pull up. It's like upright row is what I'm looking for.
Upright row, yeah.
He was doing that, but then there was also like a weird, kind of almost like a kettlebell swing in the start of it. But it didn't go through his legs because it was an easy curl bar. And then
it was like an ugly clean.
But at the end of it, when he got to the top, kind of just under his chin, he then pushed everything out. Not up, out. Only very briefly. He didn't hold it, so it wasn't actually really doing a huge amount.
Sounds great.
And he did that for like a minute, and then he took like 4 minutes off. And I was like, you both have now taken both preacher curl bars, and you've commandeered them for what was probably about 25 minutes. And I actually left before either of them had finished. I just turned in the, instead of using the preacher curl bench with the easy curl bar, I just used a dumbbell with a normal bench. You know, the way you can just go around the back of it and do it single arm. Yeah. I just did that because I was like, one, I don't want to spend 90 minutes in here. I want to be in and out in 45 minutes. Two, I'm also just not going to be like, so, I don't know about you, but like, if I'm taking ages, say I want to do more sets than usual. Say I want to go to like 5 or 6 sets of something like a bench press or like some high profile, high usage apparatus. I'm kind of self-conscious about how many other people are like around me. Are any of them waiting for me to be done? Because I don't want to, like, one, come across a dickhead or just inconvenience people, because I know how, like, annoying that is. And also, I want to get through this as quickly as possible so that, one, I can get out, but two, there isn't, like, a queue. These guys were just, like, completely oblivious. Just headphones in, on their phone for, like, 4 minutes between sets. Do a little set that takes them maybe, like, 30 seconds. Like, the work-to-rest ratio was staggeringly bad. And I was like...
God, I mean...
I was pretty much for the... half of my 45 minute workout, I was just watching this guy being like, what are you doing? Like, I was going about my stuff being like, what the fuck are you
doing? Did you ask to work in?
No, I couldn't be arsed with it. If there was no other option, it was a preacher curl, so I could very easily alter that and go single arm. And actually, to be honest, arguably better, because it then works on inadequacies in your weak arm. Other than you're just stronger, I'm just taking more of the weight.
Sure.
So yeah. I wasn't that, I wasn't mad about the exercise. I was just mad about the audacity of it, like the lack of awareness. And
it's rude.
Also, had I gone and asked to work in, they probably would have been fine with it. But then you have the whole faff of like changing their weights to your weights, changing them back in between each set, slows everything down again. And then they probably speed up as a result, which is better for everybody. But I did kind of want to, once I realized they were really slow and completely like oblivious to everybody around them, it was like out of morbid curiosity, I wanted to stay and watch them just to see how long they actually stayed. And I ended up giving up because I'd finished. But I would say the two people were on two preacher curl benches for north of 20 minutes. Nobody ever needs to be on a preacher curl bench for that long.
No, you don't. That's crazy. And also, why are you there for that long? It's like my whole workout, like I can do like a really hard workout.
Yeah.
And I'll be out of the gym in like 50 minutes.
Yeah. If it takes you 90 minutes to get through your weight workout, do it faster. Drop your weight down and do it more intensity.
Well, or, you know, if you're spending 20 minutes like doing bicep curls, like don't do that. Do 10 minutes on bicep curls one day and 10 minutes on another day. And that will be more beneficial for you. I also do think like it starts to make you resent your gym because you're just like, you should have more than this. You know, they always have one assisted pull-up machine, for example, or they'll have like one lat pull down station, or they have one dip station, or they have one squat rack.
Yeah,
that drives me up the wall when there's one squat rack and there's two fucking guys in it and they're just like taking it in turns, but they're not actually taking it in turns. One of them does a set, then they talk for 5 minutes, then the other does a set, then they talk for 5 minutes, and you're like, do your set, do your set, do your set, do your set.
Get the fuck
That's
out.
How you do it. Yeah. Get the fuck out. It annoys the piss out of me.
So, like, I that happened at the very, very start of that gym session by two other guys who weren't either of these offenders. But there was, like you say, there was one seated cable row. You know, like the big multi machines that are always in the middle. One of them only served for seated cable rows, and these guys were just standing at it, clearly using it. And as well, commandeering it, but they were just chatting. And then I went away and did it on the pin loaded machines, like the, you know, the standalone ones. Did it. That was fine. Came back after doing four sets of that in a reasonable time. They were still standing there talking. And I was like, fuck you guys.
Unbelievable.
Leaning on the machine as well. Like they were leaning on the pad of the machine, like one knee was on it, like a dog pissing all over it. And I was like, you don't even fucking
prison.
Need
it. Immediately. Nope. Prison.
Yeah. I'm overly self-conscious about taking up a gym equipment for too long because it's good. Fucking rude.
It is fucking rude. I agree.
I hate it. Fuck them.
Okay. We would not allow this in our gym. There's always a sign as well that's like, be mindful of how long you're on a machine during busy periods. No one ever is, and the gym never enforces it. The gym never goes up to somebody and they're like, sorry, but you've done like eight sets on a squat rack. Nobody needs that. You're not an Olympian.
No.
Right,
you're in a pure gym.
get the fuck, There's a carpet in this gym, bro. Like, get the fuck out of here. Lift more weight.
You've got green tens on your back squat. You do not need 10 sets.
Go home.
Yeah.
Okay. Great way to end the show. Thank you very much to everybody for listening. Thank you for continuing to subscribe. Please consider supporting us if you do not already subscribe to our Patreon. For $6 a month, you get access to two extra episodes, so it turns your podcast from a fortnightly experience to a weekly one if you decide to parcel them out that way. We will see a lot of you over on the paid side. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.